Chapter 12. The Dork Posse. Haven City, the Lower Elements. Things were as grim as they had ever been in Haven City. Even the groups of empath elves, who could clearly perceive residual images from bygone millennia, and who liked to lecture school fairies on how life was a bucket of sweet chilies compared to how it used to be in the prospecting days, had to admit that this was the darkest day in Haven's history. The citizens of Haven were weathering their darkest night, made darker still by the absence of main power, which meant the only lights were the emergency lamps powered by the old geothermal generators. Dwarf spit had suddenly become a very valuable commodity, and many of Mulch's relatives could be seen roving the refugee camp that had sprung up around the statue of Frond, selling jars of luminous spit for an ingot or two. The LEP were coping the best they could, working in most cases with limited equipment. The main problem was coordination. The net of cameras and wireless hubs suspended on gossamer wire from the cavern ceiling had been upgraded 3 years previously with lenses from Cowboy Labs. The entire network had caught fire and rained down on the citizens of Haven, branding many of them with a lattice of scars. This meant that the LEP were operating without intelligence and relying on old radios for audio communication. Some of the younger police officers had never been in the field without full support from their precious helmets and were feeling a little exposed without constant updates of information from Police Plaza. 50% of the force was currently committed to fighting a huge fire at Cowboy Labs, which had been taken over by the Crom Automobile Company. The explosion and subsequent fire had collapsed a large section of the underground cavern, and a pressure leak was barely being contained by plastigel cannons. The LEP had bulldozed through the rubble and bolstered the roof with pneumatic columns, but the fire was still liquefying the metal struts, and several types of toxic gas were jetting from cylinders around the compound. Another 10% of the officers were rounding up escaped prisoners from Howler's Peak, which had, until its containment field flickered out, housed most of the criminal goblin kingpins behind Haven's organized crime syndicates, as well as their enforcers and racketeers. These goblins were now scurrying around the back streets of Goblin Town with their subcutaneous sleeper tags not responding to the frantic signals being repeatedly sent from headquarters. A few more recently tagged goblins were unfortunate enough to have second-generation tags which exploded inside their scalps, blowing holes in their skulls small enough to plug with a penny but large enough to be fatal to the cold-blooded creatures. More of the officers were up to their eyeballs in the miscellaneous rescues, crowd control, and pursuit of opportunistic felons that went with a catastrophe of this magnitude. And the rest of the LEP fairies had been put out of action by the explosion of the free cell phones they had recently won in a competition that they couldn't remember entering, sent, no doubt, by Opal's minions. In this manner, the evil pixie had managed to take out most of the council, effectively crippling the people's government in this time of emergency. Foley and his brainiacs were left in Police Plaza, trying to somehow revive a network that had literally been fried. Commander Kelp had barely paused on his way out the door to issue instructions to the Centaur. "Just get the tech working," he said, strapping on a fourth holster. "Quick as you can!"
"You don't understand," Foley objected.
Trouble cut him off with a chop of his hand through the air. "I never understand. That's why we pay you and your dork posse." Foley objected again.
"They're not dorks."
Trouble found space for yet another holster.
"Really? That guy brings a beanie baby to work every day, and your nephew, Maine, speaks fluent unicorn."
"They're not all dorks,"
said Foley, correcting himself.
"Just get this city working again," said Trouble. "Lives depend on it."
Foley blocked the commander's way.
"You do understand that the old network is vaporized. Are you giving me free rein, to coin an offensive phrase, to do whatever I need to do?"
Trouble brushed him aside.
"Do whatever you need to do."
Foley almost grinned.
"Whatever I need to do."
Foley knew that the secret of a successful product launch was often in the name.
A catchy name is more likely to pique investors' curiosity and help the new invention take off, whereas some plodding series of letters and numbers will put everyone to sleep and ensure the product crashes and burns. The lab name for Foley's latest pet project was Aerial Radiation Coded Light Sensitive Surveillance Terragotta 2.0, which the Centaur knew had far too many syllables for potential investors. Rich people like to feel cool, and embarrassing themselves by mispronouncing that mouthful was never going to help them achieve that. So Foley nicknamed the little guys Arclights. The Arclights were the latest in a series of experimental biomech organisms that Foley was convinced were the future of technology. The Centaur had met considerable resistance from the Council on ethical grounds because he was marrying technology to living beings, even though he argued that most of the LEP officers now had little chips implanted in their cerebellums to help them control their helmets. The Council's counter-argument was that the officers could choose whether or not to have the implants, whereas Foley's little experiments were grown that way. And so, Foley had not been given the go-ahead for public trials, which is not to say that he hadn't conducted any. He just hadn't released his precious Arclights in public. Not in the fairy public, at any rate. On the Fowl estate, now, that was another matter. The entire Arclight project was contained in a single battered field kit case, hidden in plain view on top of a locker in the lab. Foley reared up on his hind legs to snag the case and plonked it down on his workstation. His nephew, Maine, clopped up behind him to see what was going on. "Dong navar, uncle," he said. "No unicorn speak today, Maine," said Foley, settling into his modified office harness. "I don't have time." Maine folded his arms.
"The unicorns are our cousins, uncle. We should respect their tongue."
Foley moved closer to the case so the scanner could identify him and pop the locks. "I do respect the unicorns, Maine, but real unicorns cannot talk. That gibberish you're spouting came from a mini-series."
"Written by an empath,"
said Maine, pointedly. Foley opened the case. "Listen, nephew, if you want to strap a horn to your forehead and go to conventions on the weekends, that's completely fine. But today I need you in this universe, understood?"
"Understood," said Maine, grumpily.
His mood lifted when he saw what was in the case.
"Are those critters?"
"No," said Foley. "Critters are microorganisms. These are Arclights. The next generation." Maine remembered something.
"You were refused permission for trials with those, weren't you?"
It irritated Foley immensely that a centaur of his genius was being forced to justify himself to an assistant for the sake of relations with his sister. "I got permission just now from Commander Kelp. It's all on video."
"Wow," said Maine. "In that case, let's see those little fellows in action."
"Maybe he's not so bad," thought Foley, keying in the activation code on an old-fashioned manual keyboard in the case. Once the code was punched in, the case synced with the lab's wall screen, splitting it into a dozen blank boxes. This was nothing particularly special, and would have absolutely no one clapping their hands and saying, "Ooh." What would have people applauding and gushing was the swarm of miniature genetically modified dragonflies waking up inside the case. The insects shook their sleepy heads and set their wings buzzing, then lifted off in perfect synchronized formation to hover at Foley's eye level.
"Ooh,"
said Maine, clapping his hands. "Just wait," said Foley, activating the little dragonfly's sensors. "Prepare to be amazed." The cloud of dragonflies jittered as though suddenly charged, and their tiny eyes glowed green. 11 of the 12 on-screen boxes displayed composite 3D views of Foley, stitched together from the viewpoint of each insect. Not only did the insects read the visible spectrum, but also infrared, UV, and thermal. A constantly updating stream of data scrolled down the side of the screens, displaying reams of information on Foley's heart rate, blood pressure, pulse, and gas emissions. "These little beauties can go anywhere and see everything. They can glean information from every microbe, and all anyone can see is a swarm of dragonflies. My little Arclights could fly through the X-ray in an airport, and no one could tell they are stuffed with biotech. They They go where I send them and spy on who I tell them to.
Main pointed at a corner of the screen.
That section is blank.
Foley harrumphed. I did a trial in foul manner, and Artemis somehow detected the virtually undetectable. I imagine my beauties are lying in pieces under an electron microscope in his laboratory.
I didn't read that in any report.
No, I forgot to mention it.
That trial wasn't exactly an unqualified success, but this one will be. Foley's fingers were clicking blurs on the keyboard.
Once I program in the mission parameters, then my arc lights will have citywide surveillance restored in minutes.
Foley instructed a single bug to land on his index finger.
You, my little fellow, are special, because you will be going to my home, just to make sure my beloved Cabaline is all right.
Main leaned in, peering at the little bug.
You can do that.
Foley wiggled his finger, and the bug flew off, winding sideways through a vent. I can do whatever I like. They are even coded to my voice. Watch. Foley leaned back in his chair and cleared his throat.
Arc light activation code Alpha Alpha 1. I am Foley. Foley is my name. Immediate deployment to downtown Haven, scenario 3. All sections, citywide disaster. Fly, my pretties, fly!
The arc lights moved like a shoal of silverfish through water, gliding through the air in perfect synchronized flight, then forming into a tight cylinder and shooting through the vent. Their wings skittered against the chute wall, sending back data from every inch covered. The theatricality appealed to Maine's graphic novel-loving sensibility.
Fly, my pretties, fly.
Cool. Did you make that up yourself?
Foley began analyzing the data that was already flooding in from his arc lights.
Absolutely, he said. Every word a Foley original.
The arc lights could be steered manually, or, if that function was offline, they would fly to preordained, irradiated spots on the cavern roof. The tiny biotech insects performed perfectly, and within minutes, Foley had a functioning network suspended above Haven that could be manipulated with a word or gesture.
Now, Main, he said to his nephew, I want you to take over here and feed information to Commander Kelp over the,
he shuddered, radio.
I am going to take a minute to check on your Auntie Cabaline.
Mac dac chival, uncle,
said Main, saluting. Something else actual unicorns could not do. Humans have a saying that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, which basically means if you think it's beautiful, then it is beautiful. The elfin version of this saying was composed by the great poet Bio Selecta, who said, Even the plainest of the plain shall deign to reign, which critics have always thought was a bit rhymey. The dwarf version of the maxim is, If it don't stink, marry it, which is slightly less romantic. But the general gist is the same. Foley had no need of these sayings, for in his mind, beauty was personified by his wife, Cabaline. If anyone had ever asked him for a definition of beauty, he would simply have directed their gaze to his wrist and then activated the hologram crystal built into his wrist computer, projecting a revolving CG rendering of his wife into midair. Foley was so in love with his wife that he sighed whenever Cabaline crossed his mind, which was several times an hour. As far as the centaur was concerned, he had found his soulmate. Love had tugged Foley's fetlock relatively late in life, when all the other centaurs had been galloping around the sim pasture, pouring the dirt, texting the fillies, and sending their chosen ones candied carrots. Foley had been up to his armpits in laboratory equipment, trying to get his radical inventions out of his head and into the real world. By the time he realized that love might be passing him by, it had already disappeared over the horizon. So the centaur convinced himself that he didn't need companionship, and was content to live for his job and work friends. Then, when Holly Short was missing in another dimension, he met Cabaline at Police Plaza. At least, that was what he told everyone. Met might be a slightly misleading verb, as it implies that the situation was pleasant, or at least non-violent. What actually happened was that one of Foley's face recognition software programs malfunctioned in a bank camera and identified Cabaline as a goblin bank robber.
She was immediately pounced on by the security guard Jumbo Pixies and ridden to Police Plaza. The ultimate ignominy for a centaur. By the time the entire mess was traced back to software error, Cabaline had been confined to a jail cell for over 3 hours. She had missed her mother's birthday party and was extremely anxious to throttle the person responsible for the mix-up. Foley was told by Commander Kelp in no uncertain terms to get down to the holding cells and take responsibility for his foul-up. Foley trudged down there, ready to spout one of a dozen standard excuses, all of which evaporated when he came face-to-face with Cabaline in the hospitality suite. Foley didn't meet many centaurs, and he certainly would never bump into one as beautiful as Cabaline, with her chestnut eyes, strong, wide nose, and glossy hair down to her waist.
"Just my luck," he blurted, without thinking. "That's just typical of my luck."
Cabaline had herself all psyched up to tear metaphorical strips off the hide of whatever imbecile had been responsible for her incarceration, and perhaps actual strips, too. But Foley's reaction gave her pause, and she decided to give him one chance to dig himself out of the hole he was in. "What is just typical of your luck?" she said, regarding him frankly, letting him know that his answer better be a good one. Foley knew the pressure was on, and so thought carefully before answering. "It's just typical of my luck," he said eventually, "that I finally meet someone as beautiful as you, and all you want to do is kill me." This was a pretty good line, and, judging by the misery in Foley's eyes, there was also more than a grain of truth in it. Cabaline decided to take pity on the dejected centaur before her, and dial down her antagonism a few notches. But it was too early to let Foley off the hook completely.
"And why wouldn't I want to kill you? You think I look like a criminal."
"I don't think that. I would never think that."
"Really?
Because the algorithm that identified me as a goblin bank robber is based on your thought patterns."
This lady is smart, Foley realized. Smart and gorgeous.
"True," he said. "But I imagine there were secondary factors involved."
"Such as?"
Foley decided to go for broke. He felt an attraction toward this centaur that was short-circuiting his brain. The closest he could come to describing the sensation was a sustained low-level electrical shock, like the ones he inflicted on volunteers in his sleep deprivation experiments.
"Such as, my machine is incredibly stupid because you are the opposite of a goblin bank robber."
Cabaline was amused, but not won over just yet.
"Which is?"
"Which is a non-goblin customer making a deposit."
"Which is what I am, dummy."
Foley flinched.
"What? Dummy? Your machine is a dummy?" "Yes, absolutely. I will have it disassembled immediately and reassembled as a toaster."
Cabaline bit her lip, and could have conceivably been holding back a smile.
"That's a start. But you still have a long way to go before we're done here."
"I understand. If you have any capital crimes in your past, I could wipe them from your record. In fact, if you'd like to disappear altogether, I could arrange that."
Foley rethought this last sentence.
"That sounded like I was going to have you killed, which I totally am not. The last thing I would ever do is have you killed. Quite the opposite."
Cabaline took her handbag from the back of a chair and slung it across her fringed blouse.
"You are quite fond of opposites, Mr. Foley. What is the opposite of having me killed?"
Foley met her gaze for the first time.
"Keeping you happy and alive forever."
Cabaline moved to leave, and Foley thought, "Stupid donkey, you blew it." But she stopped at the threshold and threw Foley a lifeline.
"I do have a parking ticket that I did pay, but your machines seem to have it in for me, and they swear I didn't. You could have a look at that."
"No problem," said Foley. "Consider it done, and that machine compacted."
"I'm going to tell all my friends about this," said Cabaline, already leaving the room, "when I see them at the Hoover Gallery launch this weekend. Do you like art, Mr. Foley?"
Foley stood there for a full minute after she was gone, staring at the spot where Cabaline's head had been when she'd last spoke. Later on, he had to rewind the suite's surveillance footage
to make sure Kavlin had kind of, sort of, asked him on a date. And now they were married, and Foley considered himself the luckiest dummy in the world. And, even though the city was mired in a crisis, the likes of which had never before been visited on the subterranean metropolis, he had no hesitation in taking a moment to check on his gorgeous wife, who would probably be at this moment at home worrying about him. Kabbaline, he thought. I will be with you soon. Since their wedding ritual, Foley and his wife had shared a mental bond like the one often experienced by twins. I know she is alive, he thought. But that was all he knew. She could be hurt, trapped, distressed, or in danger. Foley did not know, and he had to know. The arc light Foley had dispatched to check on Kavlin had been built especially for that purpose, and knew exactly where to go. Foley had months ago painted a corner of the kitchen ceiling with a laser that would attract the bug from hundreds of miles away if need be. Foley shunted the other arc light's feeds to the main situation room where Maine could monitor them, and then concentrated on Kavlin's bug. Fly, my pretty, fly. The modified dragonfly zipped through Police Plaza's vent system and out over the city, darting through the chaos that permeated the streets and buildings. Fires flared in the piazza and on the freeway. The billboards that lined every street had been reduced to carbonized frames, and floodwater filled the sunken open-air amphitheater as far as Row H. Maine can handle that for 5 minutes, thought Foley. I'm coming, Kavlin. The arc light buzzed beyond the central plaza to the southern suburb, which had more of a rural feel. Genetically modified trees grew in small copses, and there were even controlled amounts of woodland creatures that were carefully monitored and released above ground when they multiplied to nuisance levels. The dwellings here were modest, less modern in their architecture, and outside the evacuation zone. Foley and Kavlin lived in a small split level, with adobe walls and curved windows. The colour scheme was autumnal throughout, and the decor had always been a little back to nature for Foley's taste, though he would never have dreamed of mentioning it. Foley pulled his V-board toward him and expertly controlled the little bug with numerical coordinates, though it would have been easier to use a joystick or even voice control. It was ironic that someone who was responsible for so many technological breakthroughs still preferred to use an ancient virtual keyboard that he had made from a window frame when he was in college. The top half of the door was ajar, and so Foley had his arc light dip inside the lobby, which was decorated with woven wall hangings depicting great moments in Centaurian history, such as the discovery of fire by King Thurgood, and the accidental discovery of penicillin by the stable hand Shammy Sod, whose name had entered the popular vernacular to mean an extremely lucky person. For example, he's won the lottery for the second time, the Shammy Sod. The dragonfly whirred along the corridor to find Kavlin sitting on her yoga blanket, staring at the cell phone in her hand. She looked shaken but unhurt, and was scrolling through the menus on her screen looking for a network. You'll have no luck there, my love, thought Foley, then sent a text to her phone directly from the arc light. There's a little dragonfly watching over you, said the text. Kavlin read it and raised her face, searching for the bug. Foley set the eyes flashing green to help her. Foley's wife raised her hand, and the bug swooped down to land on her finger. My clever husband, she said, smiling. What is happening to our city? Foley sent another message, and made a mental note to add a voice box to the next version of the arc lights. You are safe at home. We've had some major explosions, but all is under control. Kavlin nodded. Will you be home soon? She asked the bug. Not soon. It could be a long night. Don't worry, honey, I know they need you. Is Holly okay? I don't know. We've lost contact, but if anyone can look after herself, it's Holly Short. Kavlin lifted her finger, and the dragonfly hovered before her face. You need to look after yourself too, Mr. Technical Consultant. I will, texted Foley. Kavlin took a ribboned box from the low table. While I'm waiting for you, I will open this lovely gift that someone sent to me, you romantic centaur. Back in the lab, Foley felt a stab of jealousy. A gift? Who would have sent a present? His jealousy was quickly trumped by anxiety. After all, this was the day of Opal Cowboy's great revenge, and there was no one the Pixie hated more than him.
"Don't open it," he sent quickly. "I did not send it, and bad things are happening."
But Cabaline did not need to open the box, for it was both time and DNA coded, and as soon as she touched it, the Omnisensor on the side scanned her finger and set the opening mechanism whirring. The lid pinged away from the box, spinning away to slap the wall, and inside was nothing. Literally, nothing. A black absence that seemed to repel ambient light. Cabaline peered into the box.
"What is this?" she asked. "One of your gizmos?"
Which was as much as Foley heard, because the blackness, or whatever it was, shorted out the arc light, leaving Foley ignorant as to his wife's fate.
"No!"
he blurted.
"No! No!"
Something was happening. Something sinister. Opal had decided to target Cabaline specifically to torture him. He was sure of it. The Pixie's accomplice, whoever it was, had mailed his wife this seemingly innocuous box, but it was far from harmless. Foley would bet his 200-plus patents on it.
"What has she done?"
The Centaur agonized over the question for about 5 seconds, until Main stuck his head into the room.
"We have something from the arc lights. I think I should push it across to your screens."
Foley stamped a hoof.
"Not now, stupid pony. Cabaline is in danger." "You need to see this," said Main, standing his ground.
Something in his nephew's tone, a bite of steel that hinted at the Centaur this boy would become, made Foley look up.
"Very well, shunt it across."
The screens immediately came to life with overhead shots of Haven from dozens of angles. Each shot was black and white, except for clusters of red dots.
"The dots are the escaped goblin sleeper seekers," explained Main. "The arc lights could detect their radiation signatures, but not activate them."
"But this is good news," said Foley irritably. "Send the coordinates to the agents on the ground."
"They were moving randomly, but seconds ago they all changed direction, at exactly the same time."
Foley knew then what Opal had done, how her weapon had gotten past the courier's security scans. She had used a sonics bomb.
"And they're headed for my house," he said.
Main swallowed.
"Exactly. Just as fast as they can run. The first group will arrive in less than 5 minutes."
At this point, Main was talking to thin air, as Foley had already galloped out through the side door.